Hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Now, myself and Mrs. Dutton watched a very interesting film last night called 28 Years Later. And it turns out that my friend Callum, who you know last summer we did a film about Finland together, well, he did, but I was in it, has also watched it and has some interesting views on it. And I put a tweet out about it and about the thing that I really noticed about it, which was that to my surprise, almost everybody in it was white. And I thought this wasn't allowed these days. Even in historical dramas, they make a point of sticking in lots and lots of diversity. So I was surprised by this. And I put out a tweet in which I stated that I'm confused. You know, there's it's all white people. It's almost like realistic as to what Northumberland and Lindisfarne were set would be like. This has created lots of debate. And so I thought I'd talk to my friend Callum about it. So Callum, hello.
Hey, it's good to see you again, man.
Good to see you.
Yeah, for people who haven't gone and seen it, go and see the Finland video that we did together. It's jolly good fun. But you're absolutely right, which is, yeah, everyone was white. I mean, literally, I think the only non-white person in the entire film was this Johnny Big Cock fella, the rage infected that had the biggest knob you've ever seen. And I can't even pin down what he was. Like, some people thought he looked like an ass. Some people thought he
He was
was.
mixed race, but they'd straightened his hair so he didn't look white. And then among the Jimmy Savile people from Scotland at the end, the Jimmy Savile lookalikes, you have one possibly, I don't know, North African, but you don't really see that unless you concentrate. And then there was the one that the father in the film gets off with called Rosie, and she might be maybe Moroccan or something like that, but it's not really clear. But yeah, everybody is basically white. And I thought, well, this makes sense. And if we think about our friend Academic Agent's analysis, which is the idea that woke is being gradually put away because it's pissing people off and it's going too far and it's creating a counter reaction, and people are annoyed about it, and the films are losing money, and so therefore they start reasoning, hang on, we better not make it too woke. So therefore, if we're going to set it in Northumberland and County Durham and Tyne and Wear, even now, then this is overwhelmingly white, and the people need to be white, and that makes sense. And then other people have said, well, no, it's not to do with that. They've come up with all kinds of weird ideas. Oh, it's to do with the it makes it more of a separate horrific thing if everyone's white. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. In the original 28 Days Later, the main character was black, so I don't know how that works. But there's all kinds of interesting ideas on that I am wrong, that this is a case of putting to some extent putting away woke, because you know they love writing in non-whites into 16th century England and all that kind of stuff. They love doing that. They can't get enough of it. So I was very, very surprised that it was all white. But what were your thoughts on this?
So, I understand the politicization of movies and everything, but I think it really helps to go and look at the human beings doing it and the reasons they've given, and then try and discern from this. Of course, you've got the wider context, but all we can do is deal with what we got. And with 28 days, 28 weeks, and now 28 years, we'll mention it some more in a bit. But obviously, there's a divergent point, which is from, you said, 1997 seems to be the divergent point from history, because the zombie outbreak happens, and then obviously 28 years later, where you haven't had all of those years of mass immigration, you haven't had the discovery, for example, that Jimmy Savile was a paedophile being publicly known. So there's the Jimmy Savile gang at the end, which people are wondering whether or not they're going to take the route that, oh, well, no one knew he was a pedo, so he's just this funny character. Or maybe he is a pedo and he's about to molest the main character in the new movie. But all of this stuff doesn't happen. Like, there's no Brexit, there's no mass immigration. Like, all of these political issues don't come up because you're now dealing with a world. Instead, there was a zombie outbreak. Britain became this quarantined shithole island that nobody wanted anything to do with. But getting back to that subject, if you go and look at what the director has said, and I believe the writer as well, but I just throw them in together because they both are making the film with each other. There's a couple of things that come up. One of them is a interview in which they're talking about the fact that, hey, we got the funding to do this. And the way they got the funding was they had to make three movies. So I've got a lot of criticism, which isn't necessarily more political, about the whole movie. But if you want to get into that, that's fine later. But the main problem being that they couldn't make one movie and have it self-contained. They were paid to make three, So there's that weird cliffhanger at the end of the whole thing. It's quite slow. It feels like it should have probably been a TV series, like the Fallout TV series on Amazon Prime. Whole bunch of problems there. But he's talking about that and saying, well, the reason I'm still massively excited is I want to make this movie for us. It's for our, I think he even uses the word homeland or something like that, or he's making it for our people. And they're asking him that because he's worried about the accents, because the accents are from up north, and up north is kind of hard for a lot of British people, very hard for an American audience. You know, take some guy from Mississippi who's only ever lived in Mississippi. You can understand what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, my wife had trouble with it last night, but fortunately, I used to go to university in County Durham, so I could understand the accent. I could translate.
You're translating the whole film to her. But from English to English, not even to the Finnish.
Yeah, we were watching it on, some chap had filmed it in the cinema, and we watched it on 123 Movies.
Okay.
And so there was no Finnish subtitles.
So you've got that selection bias where we're going to only have actors who can do that accent. And he's also got this interest in making sure the movie represents his homeland. He's not interested in some global aspect of the whole thing. He really wanted it to feel British and be British. So, okay, there's selection bias in what kind of actors you're going to pick for that. So there's going to be a lot of white people. Mass immigration has less hit the up north section. So maybe that's a factor. The other thing I found incredibly interesting, which some people have taken in different ways, is the director mentioned Brexit in an interview. He was talking about the fact that, according to the storyline, Britain has this virus outbreak, the whole island gets infected, it spreads to mainland Europe, but they push it back, and now all of NATO works to quarantine, not just Britain, but they seem to have either infected or evacuated Ireland as well, to keep the virus contained. And therefore, the islands here have been so disconnected from the mainland. They've got none of the technological advances, the economy and everything else, and the rest of the world just keeps on going. It's fine. Whereas Britain is stuck in this weird stasis chamber where it's not moved on. And he was thinking of parallels to try and explain that. And he mentioned Brexit because a lot of people, especially middle class people, think that Brexit happened. And then ever since, the UK has just been in limbo and stagnates and doesn't do anything. Obviously, people who paid more attention to politics than before Brexit noticed that that was happening either since 2008, because that's when the economy has been flatlined ever since, or even back to 97 with the mass immigration, and we've just been stuck in Tony Blair's world since. But he mentioned Brexit. So a lot of people took that to mean maybe he's some kind of middle-class leftist who hates white people and has those kind of views. So when there's this intro section where the poem Boots plays, there's a lot of imagery of England. You'll notice all of the flags in the movie are English flags. They're not British. There's a lot of imagery of ancient English stuff. So the Longbowmen and all this hearkening back to a simpler time, the characters are now stuck in because of the virus.
But also I assume that in a time of crisis, which this is, of course, and it's been 30 years, almost 30 years of crisis, and that's what you tend to do. You will romanticize the past and try and recreate the past. And so this idea that it was compulsory under, was it Henry V, to practice archery. And so you've got this archery. Of course, they can't maintain guns. They can't remake guns. They can't. Once they stop working, they stop working. And there isn't the ability or intelligence or facility to make them from scratch. And so I thought that was very interesting. And then you have like a really old image of the Queen on the wall in the hall of theirs from the 50s, and they have that there, and they have all of this this revival of folk culture that they have, and the rite of passage that you go out into the mainland and then you become a man by killing your first zombie, and then you go back. I thought that was all very, very interesting. But I just think to myself, well, odd that in the whole community, only one of them is not white, which is this girl Rosie, who the father has an affair with because the mother's ill. And it was it seemed to me you'd have to make a deliberate decision to do that. And I'm surprised that they don't feel under pressure, considering haven't they brought in some new Hays Code now where to win an Oscar you have to have a certain number of non-whites? Yeah.
But that's why I'm wondering. I'm looking at the director saying all this about Brexit and such. The left-wing types have interpreted that whole imagery and that scene with the montage there of showing this, because remember, like, it's an island separated off, So it's even more little islander, which is the whole criticism about Brexit, that we want to separate off from the world. So left-wing types have viewed that as some kind of parallel, saying, hey, look at this backward shithole place where they're having to survive with bows and basic farming. Look how funny backward Britain is. So if you're a director who wants to go along with that, yeah, you'd make all the characters white as well on the island, because it shows, hey, look, there's all white separated off shithole compared to the paradise where this Swedish team come from, which is the rest of the world where everything's carried on. But then you see the right-wing types, I've noticed, have looked at that and gone, very based. I would like to live there. So there's that.
So the right-wing types, yeah, I just argue, okay, it's completely white. Everyone's united. They're united against a common enemy. They have a sense of meaning to their lives and a sense of the eternal. There are religious dimensions even to what's going on. Of course, they're going to become religious in a situation like that. They don't have access to doctors. They don't have, so there's going to be really high child mortality, presumably, which they don't look into, and really high child mortality status. They can't cure her of her illness. I won't give away the plot, but like this. And so it's just a return to a pre-industrial form of life. But then it's weird. Then you get the impression in their house that you see their kitchen and whatever, and somehow they're keeping the light. The price of food is sky high, but somehow they're keeping the lights on and things like that. They still have these. You would have thought they would have ripped out the house for materials, but yet they still live in this kind of contemporary-looking interior of a home.
Yeah, well, that's the main thing that always attracted me to this series. So just to break down a little bit, you've got 28 days later, which is virus breaks out 28 days after man wakes up and has to deal with the world. And some people have described the whole series, because then you've got 28 weeks, 28 years, right? Some people have described the series as a zombie movie or a horror movie or a movie where there are zombies, but really it's about the characters, etc. But the main thing for me that stood out, and it's just a genre I love so much, is post-apocalypses. So you've got the apocalypse, which is shown in most of the intros. Virus outbreak, lots of people dead. Like, the second movie has just the best intro I've ever seen for something like that. Then you've got the post-apocalypse, where you're dealing with the just after effects. And you could argue that 28 days is a bit most of that. And then right at the end of that, and 28 weeks and 28 years, it's post-apocalypse. The apocalypse is now like something that happened ages ago. No one really cares about it. We're dealing with rebuilding. We're actually doing stuff. So in 28 weeks, America is trying to colonize London because they think it's evacuated of life. And in 28 years, they're living on their little island and exploring the mainland. The actual event of the apocalypse is irrelevant. And usually these movies are set in America because America makes all the good movies. And their post-apocalypses, as you mentioned, lots of guns. People have the knowledge on how to remake bullets, fix their weapons, etc. Whereas an English post-apocalypse, that's going to be longbows. Because not only do we not have the knowledge of the availability of firearms, we know how to make longbows and shoot them, and it's a long-standing thing in our culture. So all of that imagery, where if you're left-wing, you see it as, Britain, backward shithole, and if you're right-wing, you think, fantastic.
It's not as if we've passed on the ability to make longbows.
If you're in an environment like a zombie outbreak like that, what weapons would you have available to be made? And the only thing I think English people would think of is longbows, because the virus is incredibly infectious. One drop and you're done. Therefore, you need the distance. So we can't use melee weapons. That's insane. And it's part of the reason why the ending of the movie divided so many people. People who like zombie movies were like, what the fuck is this? I don't know how much you want to spoil, but these guys turn up and they start using melee weapons and backflips to spread blood everywhere. And it's just insane, because one drop and you're gone. You're infected. You're useless.
Yes, there was that case where in the first movie where a guy got a drop of blood in his eye from a corpse that was on top of a building, and that was it. He's gone. The father of the little girl in the first movie. So
In the second movie, one kiss, saliva transfer from a carrier to a normal, and he's infected. Like, there's a big focus on how quickly this thing can get out of control. And then the third movie sort of takes that seriously for a bit, and then right at the end just gives up.
It gives up because it wants to do a sort of Quentin Tarantino kind of blood and gore kind of thing. It's absolutely ridiculous. There are inconsistencies there, but I do think that the more I think about it, the more your timeline break idea does work. So obviously we note that the boy has no understanding of smartphones, and the Swedish soldier has got a smartphone, and the boy's response is just the Billy Elliot boy, as I call him, the Billy Elliot character. His response is, "What the hell's that? What is that? What is it? That's insane." And also, and very tellingly, and I must admire the director or the writer's subtlety about these kinds of things. At one point in it, I noticed a collapsed Happy Eater. Now, considering how young you are, well, you were born 97, 98, something like that, you won't remember Happy Eater. But Happy Eater, so it used to be one of the, when you go on the motorway and when you pull off at the service stations, wherever, Mimms, South Mimms, or one of these places, one of these service station places on the motorway, right? And those places used to have things called Little Chefs and Happy Eaters. Now they just have Burger King and Kentucky Fried Chicken like everywhere else. There were specific service station restaurants, and one of them was Happy Eater, and it was American originally, and it was this smiling orange face, and he's the Happy Eater. And they had, you see it, the image, it's there, is a collapsed Happy Eater. A part of the Happy Eater decorative frontage is lying on the ground. And I thought, hang on a minute, that closed down in 1997. That is the year Happy Eater shut in the UK. So the idea this is 28 years later is completely consistent with this being a break in the timeline. And it is true that back then that somewhere like Northumberland or County Durham would have been basically 99.5% white completely. I don't know, it's probably changed now, but when I was at university then, I come from London, there's no non-white people, there's none, absolutely none. So he is engaging in a break in the timeline. Quite why he'd want to bother making that realistic, why he would even care, I don't know. Is it this left wing idea? Well, that look how shit and backward Britain has become because it's all white and it doesn't have all that lovely diversity that you need. And so
the harkening back to the past.
The harking back to the past, but it's also realistic in terms of what would happen, which is that if you were under harsh selection pressure like that, you would become ethnocentric, and you probably would be drawn to people like yourself. I mean, I can completely see that happening. Maybe in some parts of Britain there'd be an Indian or Pakistani colony on an island or something. I mean, or somewhere. You can see that's what people would do.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, there probably is a demographic. Like, if I go on the RNS, I can probably find Holy Rood Island and see what the demographics are. It probably still is 99% white.
Holyrood.
Because Holyrood, what's the name of the island? Holy Island. It's a real island.
Isn't it Lindisfarne? It's set on Lindisfarne, I think.
It's next to Lindisfarne, or maybe the island is called Lindisfarne. I don't know.
It's Lindisfarne, because I remember going there in 1991, and you could only cross at certain tides. So you could drive over, but only at certain points. That's definitely Lindisfarne.
So I'll check it on ONS in a minute if you want. It probably still is 99%. But there's the guys who made it, like, they're as old as you, so they remember what it was like. I mean, the first film was made in 2002, I think, and there are some people who have made YouTube videos saying about how it's anti-white propaganda and whatever, politics. But one of the things that's funny is the main point is, haha, like, this one of the main characters is a black woman. But that's kind of funny. Like, only one of the characters in the whole film is a black woman. And you think back to that era, there's, again, that huge culture of representation of minorities because of politics. And in London, what is the black population in 2002? Like 1%, maybe 2%? So you could see, like, the guys who made the original film made this current one. So maybe they had a representation idea in the first film. Maybe it was just she was a great actor, I don't know. But then with this latest one, they went, nah, screw that. And it probably is somewhat to do with this narrative of, hey, we need to harken back to the past, show how Britain is a backwards place. It may also do with the casting. But you're right, it is just incredible to see a world in which it stopped in 97 being represented today.
That was a significant thing, though, at the time, that you had this significant black character in the film, one of the stars of the film, and it was making a statement at the time, in 02.
She gets with a white man, which today is, like, forbidden, because in all media it has to be black man, white woman, wig blacks. Whereas white man, black woman, that's like never allowed in British advertising. You never see it. So I gotta wonder, like,
they just hadn't advanced enough. It's not demoralizing enough. The point of British advertising is to demoralize white men and make them feel like they're being displaced. That's the point. Whereas the other way round, i.e., they are, which is they are the male is in a relationship with a foreign woman and is displacing foreign men. No, that doesn't help. That doesn't help demoralizing. That's what happens in the age of empire, isn't it? That the native women are interested in the white men. That's encouraging. So that can't be permitted. But there was. I mean, I know there's some chap that's done a video on this. But I mean, if you think about what is the narrative, white man is essentially rescued. His life is saved by black woman, and then white working class family, their lives are saved by group that is effectively led by black woman, and then they make their way to white enclave of soldiers where they have a black infected black soldier who they use as kind of a weird pet that they do experiments on for fun. And that's a terrible, terrible thing. And eventually these multiculturalist people get into the countryside and try and, you know, help out the countryside and replant the world. I mean, that's what it's about. So it's a kind of a black female savior. That's what I would think happened. I don't think I've seen the second one. Well, I don't remember that I've seen it. What's the dimensions of the second one?
So at the end of the first one, the storyline is that the zombies literally will die out. They can't eat, they can't drink, they become emaciated, and therefore the island is somewhat cleansed. So the second one begins with, hey, what about all the Brits who were on holiday, for example? They weren't part of the devastation. Some Brits also survived or got out, and we rescued them. So what NATO, led by America, does is goes into the heart of London, and the idea is to implant essential personnel and a bunch of soldiers and go house to house and burn and destroy the virus. You know, all the bodies have to go. We have to clean up the central city and then move out and cleanse the whole island. They then find a woman who is a carrier. And the main character, one of the main characters, is this man. The intro shows that he leaves his wife behind because she's about to get killed by infected. Brilliant intro. Just the moral choice he has to make, the fact you think he's kind of a scumbag for it, but he has to survive. You've got to go see the... If you don't watch the second film, just see the intro. It's great. But they catch the carrier. The whole population of essential personnel and soldiers are NATO people or Brits who are on holiday. So his kids, for example, were in Disneyland or whatever, and then are sent back and he meets them. And then it turns out his wife was a carrier. She got bit, but she didn't die or get infected. So he goes down, kisses her because he's not seen her in so long, gets infected himself from that, murders his wife, like shoves his eyes through her eye sockets. Real gruesome scene. And then the virus starts out again and all the personnel get infected. But there's not really much of a conversation to be had about like racial politics there, because the force of human beings who are coming in, they're all American military or NATO personnel. There's very few Brits in it, and they're all white again, I suppose. That's definitely true. I don't remember seeing any non-white people who were meant to be British in that film.
Okay. Another interpretation, I guess, is I think it's a little bit racist of Garland and Doyle, is what they're saying is that in 1997, Britain became taken over by mindless zombies, and there are these white enclaves that fight against them. I think it's a little bit racist. But is that what they're trying to say? That Tony Blair in 97 was the beginning of an invasion of these ferocious zombies, these killer zombies. And now, 28 years later, groups of white people are getting together into enclaves to fight them off. That's a little bit racist, isn't it?
I mean, personally, I kind of find the whole discussion of how much of weird left-wing politics the creators might have affecting the film to be largely overblown. With this most recent one, there might be more to say because of the interviews he's given about Brexit inspiring the isolation of the place, or how it would have evolved, and the fact that it's so up north it is going to be this weird white ethno-state because you've not had those years of mass immigration and everything else. I don't know how much is going into their minds with this stuff. The main thing that annoys the crap out of me is just the other stuff with the movie. I don't know how much you want to talk about that, but yeah.
Tell me, what were your thoughts on this?
Okay, so you got 28 days and 28 weeks. When 28 Days came out, you go and read the reviews from like 2003, and it gets a 6-7 out of 10. Like, it's all right. The main thing it does is change the zombie genre. So up until then, you'll have to correct me, but my understanding is that zombies had always been rather slow, methodical. That was the interpretation of zombies. And 28 Days says, hey, what if they're infected with a virus like rabies? They're now fast. They will sprint at you. They don't need rest. They will just keep coming. And they're going to rip you apart or infect you. So that's when you see zombies change. Because you may remember, I think 28 Weeks comes out in 2007. And from like 2007 until 2014, 15, there's just this explosion in zombie media. All of the video games were zombies. All of the movies were zombies. Now you got Zombieland. You got Call of Duty Zombies. You got Left 4 Dead. I mean, it goes on and on and on, right? And the interpretation of zombies is now all extremely fast, bolting at you, going to kill you or infect you, rather than these slow-moving things. The 28 Weeks Later genre, and the difference between that and 28 Days, is that Days, zombie setting, but it's mostly about the characters, how they interact with that new world. 28 Weeks, I think it was directed by an American, I might be wrong, but it's very much more American. There's these scenes where they're just gunning zombies down, there's airstrikes, there's so much more action, there's like these stupid overhead shots with dramatic music that British films just don't make. We have very different cultures when it comes to making films, and that one was very much that. But they both got kind of meh reviews. They weren't nothing amazing. But if you like them, fantastic, and I like them. Then this new one comes out. It's got the original guys. But then they just make a whole bunch of decisions that I find really dumb or gross. I mean, some of them are quite funny. So, for example, the movie begins with this intro. They've always begin with a really good intro. First intro is it breaks out in this Cambridge lab. Second intro is guys in the countryside, all cornered up. They let in a boy to save him. And then, of course, he leads the virus to them. All the infected come and they murder his wife and kids and everyone else. And only by the skin of his teeth does one guy survive. Which is, oh, God, man, this is really bad. And then this third movie, the intro is just, hey, here's a bunch of kids. And they get killed off camera. Like, you see a blood splatter on the Teletubby screen. And that's about it. That's all they bothered with. It's like, yeah, I guess that's shock value, but it's okay. It just wasn't that impactful.
It would be funnier if the zombies were actually Teletubbies.
If they were dressed up. Like
ripping someone's head off and going, that would be really funny. They didn't.
Yeah, but I don't know about you, but I just found the intro just didn't hit like the other ones. Then you cut to the island, and then the whole movie just gets kind of really slow and it's kind of boring. I mean, one of the funny things I've just found out, there's a guy called Wow Much Gaming who I watch, and he does a whole bunch of reviews of zombie media, and the main criticism is, hey, if you live in that world, here's how things would be. So, for example, if you live in the 28 universe, one drop will infect you, you'd be hyper-conscious about not getting any blood on you and staying your distance from the infected. So going real close or splattering blood everywhere, terrible idea. And then the various rules with different media. He made this great point, which is that you get into the universe in 28 years and no one seems to give a crap about any of the rules. Like the closest we get to seeing people being infected is the Swedish guys get ransacked. And then at one point Billy Elliot shoots an arrow through one of the zombies and the blood gets on his mum. And he's like, oh, just check that. There we are. No blood on you. That's fine. And then the Jimmy Savile guys just spread blood everywhere. It doesn't matter. And it feels like they gave up with the rules. The best example of that probably being the actual infected themselves. They went from being people with virus, which if you want to make them survive 28 years, make the small change that they started eating salmon or deer and you're done. They can sustain themselves and they're infected. Instead, they make these slug zombies, which crawl on the floor and eat worms, but are somehow obese. They're just dumb.
I think that's dumb. A reference. I assume that's a reference to British people that voted Brexit being fat.
Yeah, it looks like Baz from the North FC memes, covered in slime. Then they've got these alpha zombies, which don't follow any rules, as far as I can tell. There's just, hey, they've got steroids or something.
Yeah, why are there some alpha zombies and then some that are just fat?
Yeah, it's just, hey, they diverge, I guess. It just waves it away.
In 28 years, evolution doesn't work that fast in humans.
And then the regular zombies are like the minions of the alphas. They don't work like just normal zombies anymore.
Mm. And apparently they can. And apparently then, we discover they can give birth to non-infected offspring as well.
Oh god, yeah, that. I don't know what to say. I mean, and they just say, "Oh, the magic of the placenta." It's like the placenta doesn't even fully protect you from HIV.
If that's the case, they would have been giving birth to non-infecteds. If you think about how many millions of people there are in England, for 28 years, so there would have been loads of them. Well,
they never explain it. I mean, I think we're led to presume that she was pregnant, then got infected in the last few months, and therefore finally she's come to term and is pushing the baby out. But then the whole scene is just fucking stupid. Because they just said, oh, the magic of the placenta saved the baby. And the placenta doesn't even protect you from HIV. It can mitigate it, but it doesn't fully protect from HIV. The rage virus is unbelievably infectious. The idea the baby wouldn't be infected is crazy. Therefore, it's probably a carrier if it's not immediately trying to kill everything around it. Even as a baby. I mean, we see some infected children at one point, and they're just as crazy. And then Billy Elliot takes this infected baby.
There's this fat baby thing, and he doesn't shoot it.
Yeah, it just runs off.
What? No, he literally has the opportunity to shoot it, but he doesn't shoot it. Why would you do that?
What was the mission? They go to the island to kill stuff, which is needless risk, to obtain a frisbee.
Well, they go to the
island. What's the point in any of that?
I can understand the idea that they've become so primitive that you need a violent blood ritual to become a man. Getting your driving license is no longer enough. You know, there's no cars, or getting a degree or something that's out. So they need a ritual, and that ritual is they have this even with the aristocracy now, don't they? Their first kill of a deer, and they put blood on their forehead and things like this. So that I can understand. But it's like a deer. He doesn't attack you, so it's not a deer. It's more like killing a tiger, and then the tiger, even if he bites you, you can survive. So as you say, it's a very dangerous rite of passage. To needlessly potentially lose your child and other things as well. So no doctors. People would be so religious. And people would be it would be on edge all the time about the possibility of illness and stuff like that. And remember, this would be a sudden thing. There'd be people that would remember when there were doctors. So you'd have all these people that wouldn't be used to having to cope with suffering, and they'd all get depressed and kill themselves. I mean, it's so quick. So yeah, there's a lot of holes in it. But I thought I'd interrogate you on it because of all the interesting responses and have a look. But anyway, you've been to Iraq, I hear.
Sure, if you want to talk about that. Do you mind if we talk about the film a little bit more? Because I'm just...
Oh, sorry, I thought you were bored of the film. You look like you were bored. No.
Because the thing that struck me the most was they get this baby, and if it's not infected, it's probably a carrier. Like, these people have been living there for 28 years. In the previous film, we established that carriers are a thing. People have got the virus but are not reacting to it, but they can still infect others. And Billy Elliot just takes this baby and gives it back to his ethno-state island that has no infection. And I just couldn't go over how the first response wasn't from the island to just smash the baby, just throw it into the sea. Like, why would we risk this outside baby that Billy Elliot's just turned up and gifted to us? He even writes in the letter it came from an infected woman. Like, the town council or whoever would be like, nope, out, like, not dealing with that. And then the Jimmy Savile guys at the end don't make any sense whatsoever. The transformations of the zombies are just... I mean, I kind of hate them in all zombie media. Because, like, zombies are scary enough. They work as a monster. They make the setting. All these different things you're talking about, there can't be doctors, there can't be food supplies or gun supplies. You've got to make everything in-house. Like, it does enough stuff to be interesting. And then every movie is just like, after the first one, oh, they mutated and now they're, like, Left 4 Dead, there are spitters and charges or whatever. Don't need it. Just dumb. There's also the madness of, hey, they fought back the zombies from the mainland, but they looked at Britain and went, let's not nuke that. Let's not invade that and deal with the virus. Let's just leave it. Just put some boats on the outside. I mean, there's just so many things in this movie that just don't work. I mean, never mind the discussions about the actors, the motivations. Like the mum, I really thought there was going to be more to that stuff. I thought there was going to be a cult on the mainland. Like the masks from the trailer, I really thought there was going to be some kind of cult for bringing back the virus, as if like becoming infected made you a superhuman or something. The priest in the trailer becoming infected, I thought that was going to be part of it, and instead it's just some guy. He just gets infected and then is dead.
He gets and he's mad. He gets attacked. And he thinks it's God's will and something good is happening. Almost, it's the rapture. He's absolutely
yeah. It amounts to nothing.
Amounts to nothing. Like you get this during the Black Death. You'd get people that would do like to dance with the corpses and stuff. Like it set up this weird cult of just taking huge risks because what the fuck? And then no, just nothing. So there's a lot of levels on which it's not that it's not amazing. I mean, I would say I quite like Alex Garland's stuff. I quite liked Ex Machina. Thought that was quite good. I quite liked The Beach. And I think there's something else by Alex Garland that I've quite liked as well.
But would you rewatch those?
I have rewatched The Beach and I have rewatched Ex Machina. I wouldn't.
And you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it was all, you know, not as much as the first time, but it was all right. But I wouldn't rewatch this really. I wasn't amazed by this. Whereas that film that I saw recently about these sex robots, what the hell was that called? It's this film. It's this sci-fi film about these like really realistic sex robots, and they become self-aware. Companion.
What website did you watch that one on?
On Amazon. Not Amazon Prime. What's the other one? Netflix, Amazon Prime, and there's that third thing.
Oh, I lost them.
No, there's Netflix, there's Amazon Prime, and there's HBO. HBO. I think it's HBO. It's called Companion. And that was very interesting, and I would rewatch that. But
I mean, there's also some filmmaking stuff which I just don't get. So you've seen the trailer, right? For 28 Years.
Yes.
Really good. That Boots poem. I think it won an award for being the best trailer immediately. And I found out that apparently they made the trailer after they made the movie and then realized everyone really liked it. So that scene where the dad walks out with the son onto the mainland, you know, they play the Boots poem in the movie at that point. They put that in afterwards. So they finished the movie, put the trailer out, and then went, oh, crap, people really like that. Shoved it back in. I was like, right, okay, that's really weird. It didn't make any sense because, like, if you wanted to put it somewhere, you would have done it in that transition between the infection in Scotland, the dad, who's the priest, getting infected, to the modern day. That's where you should have had the Boots poem, a bunch of slideshows about old England and the infection raging throughout the country and being put down or whatever. And instead, they play some black American singing about the promised land. It cuts to black, and then some text comes on screen to be like, oh, by the way, the virus was put back from France. I feel like you could have just solved that stuff in post real easy to make it way better. They just didn't bother.
Well,
I don't get it.
They're not as experienced as making films as, you know, Callum with his filming new channel where he goes around the world and makes films. I mean,
but that's my point. I'm just some retard, whereas these guys have got this massive budget, a huge staff, and I feel like that's such a simple fix they could have done. And instead, they just don't. They just play some... Like, I'm watching the movie, and then some black American accent comes up singing about the promised land. I don't know about you, but that just took me right out of it.
And also, the movie is about exactly the opposite of anything to do with Black America, isn't it? The movie is about white ethnostates where people dress as Jimmy Savile and stuff. So it's got nothing to do. I assume that was deliberate. I assume that was deliberate to make out that no one knew about Jimmy Savile and what he did. So therefore, Jimmy Savile becomes worshipped as a kind of god, rather like Prince Philip on Vanuatu. And that they're the followers of Jimmy Savile or something like that. I don't know. I assume it was some kind of weird reference to that. And also,
I don't know if you noticed, there were two references to the Jimmy cult before you get to them at the end. So you remember the zombie that was hung up with a plastic bag over its head?
Yes.
If you look on the chest, someone has carved the word Jimmy into his skin. And then in the house that's in, there's this writing on the wall that says the end is coming, and then someone's written Jimmy next to it, so Jimmy is coming or whatever. So, I mean, this is the really annoying thing about it being funded as a three-part series. It's got to be three movies. Is it's kind of hard to criticize this crap, because at the moment it looks like crap. There's just, Jimmy Savile gang turns up, and then it cuts to black. But, oh no, wait, the second movie and the third movie could be amazing and explain it all. So what am I to do? I just sit here and accept that, oh yeah, you can make crappy movies until, as long as the promise there's a better one down the line. I don't know about you, I just hate that aspect of it.
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't pick up on as many of the subtleties as you did. For example, I didn't even notice that it said about Holy Island, because I was watching, as I say, a version that had been filmed in a cinema by some bloke who put it on 1-2-3 movies on my laptop with my wife. And so I wasn't able to, the subtleties kind of went a bit over my head, I'm afraid. I thought it was worth discussing anyway, and thank you very much. Let's leave Iraq for another time when we can plug your movie, presumably, that you're making about it. That would be...
Yeah, sure. So I got back from Iraq a little while back. I made this film about traveling there, and it's uploaded, and then some South Korean company, because South Koreans are dogs, claimed copyright ownership over the North Korean music I played, which is like, doesn't make any sense. So I'm currently in a legal battle, which is going to take another 30 days until they bugger off. Really annoying. Anyway, I'll just show these notes so people can...
You've always used North Korean music, though. I mean, I assumed it was... How can it be copyrighted by South Korea unless they play it in South Korea for them, for fun?
Yeah, it's nonsense. So North Korean productions are owned by the North Korean government. The North Korean government refuses to sign even UN declarations on copyright, so it's copyright-free. You can use whatever you want. The South Korean company had some South Korean singer sing the same song awfully. Like, the quality of her singing is terrible compared to the North Korean production. Whole other discussion. And then they've claimed that I've used her song when I obviously haven't. It's completely different. You don't own it. Go away. So I'm just in some stupid legal battle for that to come out. But whilst I was there, I did get a lot of treasures, and I wanted to show these. I showed Ed before we started. So these are the notes from Saddam Hussein era and Bashar al-Assad's Syria, and they'll be going to subscribers when the video goes live. I've got a few of those. I also just love them, like, because these are going to be destroyed within the next 10 years. They're probably not going to exist. Like, all these things, they just dry up.
So, no, it's good, the things that you bring back from your travels. I mean, I, of course, regularly wear my ZANU PF hat.
Commander!
I think it's good. I hope one day to run into a Zimbabwean while I'm wearing it, but until then, I'm perfectly content with my ZANU PF hat. Okay, well, thank you, Callum. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And if you haven't seen it, go and watch 28 Years Later, chaps. It's at least interesting. And I will see you all soon. And goodbye.
Are you ready for the future of the West?